I'm David Marcus, host of Drinks with the Deal, and today our guest is Sam Dannon, the managing partner of Hunt & Andrews Kurth. Sam, thank you for joining us today.
Hello, David. Great to be here and great to spend some time with you today.
So this is the third in a four-part podcast mini-series we're running with law firm leaders. And we're going to talk to you today about your career arc, how you got into the law, became a litigator in Miami, how you moved into management at Hunt, issues you're confronting today in running the firm, and then finally, a little bit about how you decompress from the job. So with that, tell us a little bit about yourself and your background and how you came to the law.
So my initial interest in law school is really driven from my parents and my grandparents. I'm a first generation Cuban American. And, you know, it was very important for my parents and my family when I was embarking into college, right? From high school going into college, it was very important for them that I had a profession, that whatever I did through my university and then graduate school, that I ended up with a profession that would always be there that I could practice. And so when I left to college, I was raised in Miami and I was going off to Penn undergrad. I was given four options by my parents. I could be a doctor, I could be a lawyer, I could be an engineer, or I could be an accountant. And what I knew going into it was that anything that was math and science was not really going to be something I was going to be driven to, at least for the profession and to finish my schooling. And so it became natural to me to look at law and law school and the practice of law as something that I would embark on. And frankly, it was something that was very natural for what I had been doing in high school, because I felt good about engaging with individuals one-on-one, learning about different people and different aspects of what they liked and what they liked doing. And I think like any normal high school around that time, we would engage in discussions, and I enjoyed the aspect of trying to convince people or persuade people into one way or another. So for me, it was a combination of what my family was driving, which today I look at and I really appreciate that guidance and that emphasis. I think it was very important guidance to me. Not so much when I was 17, but I really appreciate that they drove me in this direction.
And then you went to law school at Penn in the late 80s, where certainly Wharton was beginning to become a massive feeder to Wall Street. And many of his students at Penn Law were focused on having careers in corporate law in New York. But you obviously took a different direction.
I did. And that is accurate. And I think to this day, if you would look at a lot of the class of Penn, I could say a big number of my classmates went to New York and the Wall Street firms in New York. And there is a connection between the law school and Wharton. And at the time, Washington was picking up too, but it was out of the norm, if you want to call it, to be out into Florida and into Miami. But Miami was a growing center at that point. And I knew that from a litigation perspective, that starting out in a place like Miami, I would get opportunities to be before the courts, to be arguing motions, to be getting responsibility, that looking back was just fantastic and really helped me in how I developed. Of course, coming back home to where I was raised and probably a little bit more pull of being that first generation Cuban American, that also was a draw to bring me back into a community where I thought I could be a successful lawyer and do the type of practice that I was going to enjoy and completely develop as a litigator.
And you're bilingual in obviously Spanish and English. So did you foresee that as being a major factor in your career development? Or did that happen once you started practice?
You know, that's a great question. One of the stories that I tell, I did not think about that when I was coming out of law school. And I was a native Spanish speaker. So I grew up in a Spanish household. I did not learn English until really first grade, elementary school is when I started learning English. So yeah, I was just more focused on, okay, what did I need to become the best lawyer and the best litigator I could become? But after about maybe 6, 7, closer to the 10-year mark, I started realizing that the Spanish and the ability to be a native Spanish speaker and the ability to practice in almost a bilingual way was something that was very beneficial to me and to clients, and really gave me, and I think forged the road for what became my practice. A number of years into practice, I was meeting with a general counsel for a client, and I had just worked on a matter for them, assisting them with a compliance issue in their operations in Latin America. And that general counsel explained to me, he goes, you know, the benefit that you've provided here is that you can tell me directly what's going on. I have the confidence that I have a U.S. trained lawyer, a U.S. based lawyer that can visit on location in the offices and the operation in South America. You can talk to our employees. You can talk to our executives in country. You can talk in native Spanish, so they're going to open up to you. And you can come back and directly talk to me. And that's really when it clicked for me as to how helpful that would be. And I'll tell you, David, it's something that throughout the next 20 years was really beneficial for my practice. And I would say typically on any given list of cases that I would be doing a year, yeah, I would say that half would involve something, some aspect of that bilingual nature.
So you started practicing in Miami at Holland and Knight, and then you and a group of lawyers moved to what was then Hunton and Williams when they were opening in Miami in 1999. Talk about that move and what you learned from it in terms of bringing lawyers into a firm, lawyers from a different geography, and the challenges and opportunities in integrating lawyers from a different firm into your firm.
1999, as you said, was when myself with a group of partners at Hull & Knight, so the four of us, three of us are still practicing here at the firm. What really interested us about Hunton & Williams at the time was the opportunity to open an office. And Hunton & Williams had in its plan, in its strategy, a growth into Florida. It was very natural, you know, from the Richmond, Virginia, DC growth down into the Carolinas and then Atlanta. So it made a lot of sense for them to come into Florida. And that's how the opportunity came about. And we were excited about that challenge, about that opportunity. And so we came in, and I'll say right from the get-go, what made us interested in Hunton and what really made us feel good about Hunton was that Hunton had a right balance of practice, seeking out the intellectual challenge, seeking out having a profitable, successful firm, and also balancing that with family and making sure that a culture was maintained of teamwork. And I would say from the individuals that I met in 1999 and 2000, as we started, a lot of those individuals are still some of my closest friends at the firm that I got to work with. And then I think what I learned and what's very important about opening in a new geography and coming into a firm is that importance of teamwork. Because at the time in the late 90s, early 2000s, when large firms were opening offices, there wasn't this specialization that you see today in practice. It was more like, okay, what practices address the market? What practices are there and where can I succeed in it? Litigation in Miami made a lot of sense. And so what we learned and what I learned and what still drives me today is the importance of teamwork, of collaborating with other offices to make sure that you just don't become kind of a franchise location, but you are integrated into what the firm is doing, what other lawyers are doing, and making sure that you can support the other lawyers and what they need to do, because then they're going to look to you how you can support their operation. So the lesson that I still carry is one of the importance of teamwork and integrating into what the firm does well and making sure that your practice is integrated into what that firm is doing, what the other lawyers are doing, but always maintaining that culture of teamwork, because the lawyers you start building bonds with from day one in that internal legal ecosystem are the ones that are going to be your colleagues that are going to make you a successful practitioner going forward into the future.
And then how did you start to get involved in management, and how did that become a bigger and bigger part of your role in the firm?
So I started as a young partner. I kind of volunteered and helped, and then was asked to be on the committees that would manage some of our younger attorneys and our associates, right? And I think our firm, like a lot of firms, had an associate committee where partners are asked to help in the evaluation process, the compensation process with associates. And that has, and I think traditionally has been, and still is, an opportunity for the young lawyers to kind of get their feet wet in management. And so that's where I started. Also, you know, back to this point of the teamwork, it gave me the opportunity to engage with a number of peers around my levels in management type of roles. You know, when you meet, when you're discussing things, you get to engage with them. They get to see how you operate. So that was my first step in it. I'd say that a lot of the lawyers that I was first with 25 years ago in these committees, you know, a lot of them went into other management roles within the firm. So as I continued to build my practice and really focusing on working hard, right, maintaining the practice, building the practice, because I think that that is, in a law firm setting, the important way of earning respect of your partners is making sure that that practice is there, you know, and litigating. I was asked to first help with the practice group, the commercial litigation practice group, which is under the team. And after doing that for a number of years and continuing on, then I was asked to lead the litigation team. And I did that starting in 2012. So at that point, I had the opportunity to take a real serious role in managing our litigation team, which I think, you know, again, the way we operate, which isn't uncommon to other law firms, right, is our teams operate like divisions of a corporation with some P&L responsibility, support, marketing, motivation of our lawyers. And I got to get that experience. And then that exposure from there led to me being elected by the partners to our firm's executive committee. We have a partner-wide vote, and there are 3-year terms that you're elected to. And my partners elected me. They elected me a number of times over the years to be on the executive committee. And so from there grew more of a firm-wide management role while continuing my practice.
And what did you enjoy about management, and how did you balance your management responsibilities with your practice?
So that one's always a tricky thing to do, with balancing the practice with the management. I would say that when I was in the roles of team head and the executive committee, for the way I was able to do it was, I put a lot of importance on maintaining the practice and growing my practice. So the way I would do that is, first came clients, right? First came my client obligations, which were really what the firm was driven by, right? We're driven by giving our clients the top service, the results they're looking for, the guidance they're looking for, the counseling they need. So I always put what came with my matters and with the clients first. And then I would do the management roles. They're different, right? The team head roles, you have support and you have team members that can support you on various functions of there, whether it's the finance function, the marketing function, the team manager function. And we are very fortunate to have some very strong team members. And so you lean on them and rely on them. And it was a fantastic result on that. And then on the executive committee, when you're a member of the executive committee, you're meeting monthly, and you're able to rely on how you're prepared for those. It's almost like a board setting, right? You have certain meetings that you know you have to do, and you prepare for them and you do them, but they should not overtake what your practice is. And I would say that for me, and maybe it's part of what continued to get me into these roles, is I really believed in the importance of maintaining a robust practice, and that being in these roles was not a substitute for maintaining a robust practice. So it was hard. right? I think people today ask me, how do you balance? It was very difficult, but that's how I balanced. I always focused on making sure the practice maintained the same, that the revenue was still being generated from the practice, that matters were being undertaken. And I think it adds a level of credibility to what you ask then of your partners when you're in the management role.
As your time on the executive committee progressed and you perhaps began to contemplate the possibility that you might have the opportunity to be the managing partner, how did you think about strengthening your knowledge or confidence in areas of management with which you might not have had as much familiarity? What skills did you think you needed to be a really complete law firm manager? And how did you go about gaining those skills if they weren't skills that you used as part of running a group or being on the executive committee?
On that, I think there are certain things that leading a team and being on the executive committee, which are the people end of it, that you do learn over time, and you either do it in a way that you gain your partner's confidence or not. So you get a lot of the, what I would call people skills, the engagement skills, the motivation skills. Those are there. But I do think it's a good question about things you have to get familiar with that you're not doing when you're in those roles is more into the operation and the finances of the firm. How does it work on a day-to-day basis? What is it that operations are doing that I think as a lawyer, you take for granted? For instance, one of the examples I use is getting into the role. And one of the things we had to do was we were updating wireless access points in the offices, right? As a lawyer, as a team manager, as an executive committee, that's not something that you would even really care or know about.
Somebody else's problem.
Somebody else's problem. And all you know is that when you walk into any one of our offices, you can log in and get Wi-Fi. And that's something that luckily for me, I don't know if you want to call me a gadget person or hands-on, but I've really enjoyed the mechanical aspect. Some of it is I've been a boater my entire life and fisherman, so I kind of like doing stuff like that. I had that interest. And because I enjoyed engaging with our non-lawyers too, I learned that you got to have the time to focus and be interested in the operational side of it. And so that one was a great example from the technology side, but same thing from the finance side. All of a sudden, you're now charged and responsible for where the firm's financial operations are going. And we're blessed to have a wonderful CFO who guided me through this, but I had to get an understanding of what it all looks like, what the timing looks like, what the various components are. And then I do think that you start paying a lot more attention to some of the industry financial data services, the reports that they provide on a monthly basis. You start looking around to get an understanding of how the financial day-to-day works.
And how much do you talk to your predecessors at Hunt in your role and to your peers at other firms?
So I have the very good fortune of my predecessor being a very close friend, someone I actually went to law school together with, and we've been practicing together since he's one of the ones that started this Miami office of Hunt in 99 with me. We've been blessed by practicing together and working together for a number of years. So I can lean on my predecessor whenever I really need to. I try not to overuse that. I want to make sure that I'm thinking through it in my own way and let my gut make my decision first when I have some difficult decisions. But then I will pass by anything that I think is an important, challenging decision. And of course, anything that has any historical context to it that I need to get to, he's available and open to discussion on anything. And I think it's very important for how the transition worked, because it was key to me, if I was going to come into this role, that the transition be something that was seamless and that was something that was not disruptive. And I think the fact that I was on the executive committee and a team head for so many years together with my predecessor as being the managing partner, that that transition was done as seamlessly as possible. It was almost a natural transition. We're different people with different initiatives, but I think the partners felt, and I feel it to this day, I felt confident that I could step into this role. And that's really, I think, probably one of the most satisfying things of being in the role is that the partners that you've known for so many years and the newer partners have confidence in what you're doing, that you feel that you've provided them that type of confidence.
What issues are you most focused on as a law firm leader?
So as a leader of Hunt, and I look at it in a couple of ways. First and foremost is to maintain the culture of the firm that has gotten us to where we are, that has made us who we are, has made us successful for so many years. Our firm is 125 years old next year. So that's a long time. We are very proud of the fact that we are collaborative, which means, right? And it's not just a word for us. It means that you know that if you need a team of partners that are in another practice area or in another office, and you need them to help you get to the results you need with the client, they are there for you because they understand how a collective group of individuals is going to be so much more effective to the client. And it's not just the client of the one partner, it's the client of the firm. So you know that you got that team. And then two, combined with that culture, is maintaining the fact that this is a good place to work at. And that's what I know you will get from our longtime successful partners, which is they feel like there's a team, they feel supported, they feel that people respect them, and they like it here. It's a pleasant place to engage with. And I think the importance of maintaining that then goes to what we ultimately do, which is providing our clients with excellent service and excellent legal work, because that then will come across to clients. Clients are going to see, not only am I getting effective, top-notch work product because there's a team behind it and not just one person, but that they're working together and that they enjoy working together. Because then they're going to see, hey, wait, if there's an issue that the one lawyer I'm talking to is not really the expertise, that there's no problem with bringing in someone who has that expertise. They're not going to be shy about it. And that person's going to come in and work together with them without being reluctant to work together or work for the client. And I think that then helps the firm overall, because now the clients are seeing, this is the level of service that I can get from Hunton.
And then what else do you focus on outside of the culture?
So outside of maintaining the culture, obviously there's the industry issues. So I think what's in the forefront right now is the retention of talent, retention and recruitment. And that's tied into, where's your firm performing profitability-wise and economically as compared to the peer? So I'm looking at those outside influence issues. I want to make sure that we are on a profitability journey that's consistent and even above what the industry is doing. And those are market factors that you have to focus on, learn about, understand, and then make decisions on what metrics do I need to be looking at our firm? What are the levers that we can pull to make sure that we're consistent on that, so that our lawyers know over the years that this is the firm that's going to stay relevant in what we're doing for clients, the level of engagement, because we are a profession that attracts highly motivated, driven, smart lawyers. They're looking to be challenged intellectually. So we got to make sure we have the intellectually challenging work and that there's the financial consistency that we're seeing. We're blessed in our industry as to how we can perform financially. And we got to make sure that we're doing the right things along those lines to make sure our firm is consistent with that industry.
How do you think about your associates? One of your children is an associate at a significant law firm. How do you look at that generation of lawyers and what they want out of their careers? And then how, as an institution, do you provide that? Because in some sense, you're competing for them and their labor just as much as you're competing for partner talent.
Correct. To this day, it's a very competitive part of the industry, is the young talent, the up-and-coming lawyers. And yes, I do have the benefit of my oldest son being an associate at a major firm. And whether he knows it or not, I'm learning from what that generation is thinking. But I think at some point you ask, you know, what do I enjoy about the job? one of the things I really enjoy is engaging, and I enjoy engaging with our younger lawyers. I try to engage with our summer associates, our young associates as they're coming in. Last couple of years, I've been able to do a morning run with the summer associates where they get together all in one office, and it's been fun. And then I get to see them when they're first years. I think that generation is really looking for the same type of professional satisfaction that I was when I was coming out of law school, which is you want to be challenged intellectually. You want to be working on interesting things, and you want to be at a firm that when you're talking to your peers and when you're talking to your family, you're saying, I'm at this firm. This firm is known for doing this type of specialized practice, which I'm part of. I'm being challenged intellectually. I'm working hard, but I'm getting the opportunities to develop into a lawyer that is going to be a lawyer at the top of their game. And I think the associates today are still doing that. So what we try to focus on in my messaging to our lawyers, our partners, and our senior associates and counsel is that we have to ensure that we maintain the experience for our young lawyers is meaningful. And what I mean by that is that we're mentoring them and we're engaged in their mentoring so that we work hard to give them opportunities. If it's litigation, I always focused on trying to get them depositions, trying to get them in court, making sure that their contributions to the practice were recognized and that they understood that they weren't just here just to bill hours and checking a box. They were here to contribute their thoughts and what they could add to this teamwork, right? To this collaboration, because they're going to bring a different view into certain matters and certain challenges that we face. So they should make sure that they're expressing what they can add into their view. And then on the corporate side, it's making sure that you get the opportunities for transactions and understand why certain negotiations are happening, why certain clauses are being sought after. And we have a very robust pro bono program that gives opportunity to lawyers where they maybe can't get it with a client driven, they can get it through pro bono. But I think it's focused on what we want to give them as opportunities so that they make sure that it's meaningful. And I think that, frankly, is one of a number of challenges that law firms like Hunton face going forward, right? Because you have a combination of not only the remote working of today's world, but the remote environment has taken over how you conduct negotiations, how you conduct closings, how you conduct depositions, how you conduct hearings. So it's keen on us to find the best way to make sure that it's meaningful for them.
And then finally, how do you decompress from the job?
The first thing that I would say is I have a regular workout schedule. I run and I also do a circuit training program. And I'm pretty religious about doing that no matter where I am with the travel that is required in this job. I can always put on a pair of running shoes and go out and run, and I can always find a gym to do weights. But that's more like part of what is necessary to get through the day and work and make sure that you're physically up for it. And so I enjoy that. It really puts me in the right headspace to be able to make the decisions and carry them through. My driver on decompressing really is to be outdoors. I am an avid boater. I've fished a lot throughout my lifetime. I enjoy that. I enjoy spending time on the water, on the boat with my family. We spend a lot of time in the summer on the water in and around Miami. And then in the winters, we're in the mountains. We get to spend a lot of time skiing. We try to do it as much as possible together. And we spend a lot of time hiking in the summer. So really, to me, it's being outdoors. There's nothing that can beat being outdoors and hiking, skiing, out on the water, anything along those lines. That's the way to decompress.
Sam, thank you so much for joining us today.
All right. Well, thank you, David. It's been fun talking today.
For Drinks with a Deal, I'm David Marcus.